This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with LSU Public Policy Research Lab Director Michael Henderson on how Louisiana citizens regard our government, taxes, gender equality, and other matters. We'll also hear from Advocate Capital Bureau Chief Mark Ballard commenting on this week at the regular session, including the Senate passing a measure to require unanimous verdicts at felony trials. Louisiana and Oregon are the only states in America in which somebody can go to jail on a felony without a unanimous jury. Clemson University professor Gary Maclis on the disregard for conservation in America. Dr. Maclis is preparing for a conference at LSU next week, and we will talk with him. He is regarded as one of the authorities in our country on this topic of conservation. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. And you can email us talk@talklouisiana.org. In just a bit, we'll hear from Michael Henderson of the LSU Public Policy Research Lab on some findings in a survey of 852 Louisiana citizens on how we think about various matters, including taxes, government, gender equality. We're going to cover some ground with Michael Henderson. We start with Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief, for his weekly visit from the Capitol, where a regular session is ongoing. And today, there is certainly some interest nationwide in what happened in the Louisiana Senate yesterday. The Senate advanced a bill that represents the most serious challenge in nearly a half century to a state law enshrined in Louisiana's Constitution that allows for convictions in serious felony cases without a unanimous jury. The Senate passed it 27-10, one more vote than needed. It took two-thirds, so now it goes to the House, and it'll, of course, take some heavy lifting to get this through the House, but the fact that it's gone this far is notable. What do you make, Mark Ballard, of this development?
Well, it is a turn back of a law that was kind of brought in during the Jim Crow era, Reconstruction and Jim Crow era, to try to dilute the jury power when dealing with people of color, and it went through surprisingly easily in the Senate yesterday, though it only had one vote more than what was necessary. I think it's going to have a tougher row in the House, where they are more traditional, and they'll probably keep it, even though I think we're one of only two states that still have that. And I feel that it may be a little more difficult in the House.
Louisiana and Oregon are the only two states that don't require a unanimous verdict. And you remember the movie The 12 Angry Men? In Louisiana, if there was a holdout, it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't at all. No.
No. No.
A large part of this is going to depend on what committee that it gets assigned to when it gets over to the House. If it's in the Judiciary Committee, it likely will make it out. If it's in, the Administration of Criminal Justice, it'll be a lot closer vote and may not make it out.
And then it'll take 70 votes on the House floor,
which will also be a very difficult row.
Yeah. So it still has a long ways to go, but the fact that it has cleared the Senate is notable. And some attention on something that I'm sure many people were unaware of. Here we are in these other southern states, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina. They all have laws that require unanimous verdicts, but not Louisiana.
I think it was more of a tradition. It's the way it's always been. And we forgot a little bit about how it got started in the first place.
Well, another matter that gained some attention beyond our borders, after pointed arguments on both sides, a House committee yesterday rejected a bill to allow public school teachers to carry concealed handguns into schools. Governor John Bel Edwards, who has touted his pro-gun credentials, was against this one, and he got his way. I'm sure the last thing he wanted was to have this reach his desk, Mark.
I think so. I think so. There are other bills out there that would do the same thing, but this was kind of a shot saying that, well, it's not going to make it out of the Criminal Justice Committee, and it was a very close vote, and surprisingly that you had a former sheriff and a former sheriff's deputy voting for it. Mostly law enforcement is against this idea. The state police, for instance, came out strongly against this idea, along with the governor. So we're thinking that it may not, we may not be seeing pistol packing teachers in our public schools.
Well, it was a 9-7 vote. So it was a close vote in the Criminal Justice Committee. So this one goes by the wayside, and right now it doesn't look like we're going to be arming our teachers in Louisiana. There are some other bills that are permeating, and one, as you report in today's Advocate, a Louisiana House committee rejected the idea of voting on Sundays. Whose idea was this?
That was Gary Carter. He's a representative that represents the Algiers section of New Orleans, and he was saying that, you know, that he finds that the churches is they tend to be the community centers in a lot of neighborhoods around in towns, and that is true around the state. And he was saying that, you know, that would be a good place you know, to gather people, get them interested in voting, and then kind of going out after church services to cast ballots. He thinks that it would have increased the number of people voting. The argument to that, of course, was from the Secretary of State and the voter registrars around the state are saying that, you know, that's not the real issue. I mean, if that's what we want to do is increase voter turnout, then voting on Sunday is not really going to make much of an impact.
Okay. Elizabeth Crisp reports today that legislation aimed to strengthen state policies against sexual harassment in government appear to be headed for a swift passage in the state capitol. This one is, of course, in response to not only some incidents in Louisiana, but nationwide. What do you think of this?
I think that's right. I think that we'll see this within the next couple of weeks. There's a bill by Barbara Carpenter, who represents the northern part of Baton Rouge, that has passed the House and is past the Senate committee and will be going to the Senate floor next week. And I'm thinking that it will be easily voted on. And if that doesn't work, there's half a dozen other bills out there that went through almost without opposition. And what it'll do is it'll kind of create a uniform policy for all the state agencies. What you have now is different policies for handling sexual harassment complaints, for dealing with that kind of behavior in the workplace, but they're all different depending on what agency you're in. This will make a uniform policy for all state agencies.
John Milkovich, the flamboyant senator from Shreveport, has a physician's bill of rights that would require the Board of Medical Examiners to provide a physician a written notice of complaint within 10 days of receipt, reveal the identity of the complainant, and record all communications between investigators, board members, and the affected physician related to the case. This is something he says that he is pursuing, Mark, because he wants to provide doctors more opportunities to protect themselves, their livelihoods, and their reputations from improper investigations. And this bill will now go to the full Senate after clearing the Senate Health and Welfare Committee.
And that's what he says. But what it'll also do is undermine the investigations that go in when doctors make mistakes. Right now, you would have to, if you wanted to file a malpractice suit, you would have to get a favorable ruling from one of these investigatory boards, and that very rarely happens. And the boards are saying, wait, you know, if you pass this, it's going to make it more difficult for us to do these investigations, and we'll be allowing a lot of doctors that, you know, are not that good to be falling through the cracks on this. There's talk out there that's likely not to make it far through the process, but for that, I mean, a lot of physicians are against the idea as well as the board itself. However, he makes a compelling argument, bringing in folks that argued that they were mistreated by the board system. So we'll have to see how that goes.
And a measure to allow cameras in nursing homes has sailed through the Louisiana House. Rebecca Allen reports in today's Advocate. And this is one that, of course, has some ardent opponents, but nonetheless, the bill was backed by AARP, and it goes to the Senate. What do you think?
Well, we were surprised that it didn't get much opposition on the floor. I mean, I guess the thinking is, I mean, who's going to be voting against trying to protect mom and dad in a nursing home? They certainly don't want to be casting that ballot. We'll just have to see how that works on the Senate side. The nursing home industry has a far stronger support among the senators than they do among the House members, it seems to me. And so I'm not sure if that'll make it through, but it certainly was a surprise yesterday to see how easily it passed.
And another story that you covered, expectant mothers considering abortion will be given detailed information about how to give birth and put the child up for adoption under legislation sponsored by Rick Edmonds of Baton Rouge that advanced to the full House yesterday.
The Right to Life, the anti-abortion group, saying that that adoption is a key component of their arguments, and it has not really been forwarded. It's not really been focused upon. There was a lot of focus that came upon because of that documentary that was brought out about a Metairie boy who went to see his birth mother in Indiana. It got a lot of attention in Hollywood, and it was premiered at the governor's mansion in March. And it sort of kind of reinvigorated the Right to Life movement to remember, say, well, we do push adoption as a major component of our anti-abortion stances. And it made it through the House, and it made it through House committees yesterday. It'll likely make it through the entire legislature fairly quickly and fairly soon without much opposition.
Well, thank you, Mark Ballard. We'll talk next week. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Michael Henderson, director of the LSU Public Policy Research Lab, is in-house. And if you'd like to talk, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. We do want to note that former LSU Chancellor Paul Merle died Monday night. Merle was 83. He served as LSU Chancellor from 1974 to 1981. He was only 39 when he became chancellor after starting at LSU in 1961 as a part-time chemical engineering instructor. And a visitation is set for Friday, 5 to 7 at Ravenhorse Funeral Home on Government Street. Another visitation, 11 to 1 at University Baptist Church on Saturday, with a memorial service to follow. In-house is Michael Henderson of the Manship School of Mass Communication and the LSU Public Policy Research Lab. And before we start talking about the many areas that you're profiling and surveying, LSU's got a new dean in a few months of the Manship School. Certainly quite an honor, and a new face, a new face, but one that you know pretty well.
That's right. That's right. Dr. Martin Johnson will assume the role of dean in July of this year. It's a fantastic hire, in my opinion. Martin, or Dr. Johnson, has a stellar research record. He's very familiar with the school, opportunities it has in the future. I think it's a fantastic hire, and he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's been a guest, and certainly we'll be calling on him again soon. And we commend the work that Jerry Seppos has done over the last seven years. He's been head of the school, and he's done some fine work.
That's right. Jerry was Jerry's the only dean I've known. He was there. I came to the school while he was dean, and he's done a great job.
Well, you have been surveying the sentiments of the Louisiana citizens, the electorate. 852 people are the participants in this Louisiana survey that you do annually. And some say, well, how can you get the sentiment of the state with 852 respondents? That's actually a pretty good number for a poll. And you can, if you call on the right 852 people, you can find out a whole lot, can't you?
That's right. That's right. This is something that's often misunderstood. You don't have to talk to everybody in the state to get a sense of what most people think about issues. It all comes down to how you do your survey, and it's a big part. Sampling is a big part of what what makes a difference between a quality poll and a you know, poor quality poll is how you go about collecting your sample. And we use scientific approaches. We use probability sampling, which means everybody has a chance, or at least everybody with a telephone, and we do call both cell phones and landlines, has a chance of being surveyed. And if you incorporate that sort of probability sampling and some statistical adjustments on the back end, there's a pretty good record of those approaches generating representative responses.
Now, these surveys tend to create news when they go against the grain, when they produce surprising findings, and I don't know that that's the case so far in the areas that have been revealed over the last few weeks. But so far, you've revealed three areas, and the first one shows citizens unhappy with state government. That really is no great revelation, but how unhappy is people are we?
I mean, we describe it as the public being fairly disillusioned. And yeah, the top line takeaway that overall, a large share of residents of Louisiana think the state's heading in the wrong direction. That's not surprising. We've had a lot of that over the last 7 to 8 years. But what we think we added this year is we really dug in deep, tried to get a sense of why people felt unhappy or disillusioned with state government, and try to get past just the issues of the day, the politicians of the day, to see how they feel about how our democratic process in the state is operating.
And the second report from the Louisiana survey shows addressing the fiscal cliff through income tax changes is more popular than sales tax changes. Some might find that a bit of a surprise, but 87% of the respondents recognize that Louisiana faces budget problems. 59% say those problems are very serious, and that's how you get down to it. There are people who certainly are erudite leaders, like John Kennedy, our U.S. Senator and former treasurer, who says we don't really have a budget problem. We've got a spending problem, not a problem with revenue, but the people, it appears, largely would accept an income tax change. Why?
That's a great question. I have to say I was a little bit surprised when we saw this. It was the strongest of the – we asked about five different approaches and got people's opinion on each of the five to deal with the current budget situation the state is dealing with. And the income tax one was the most popular. The sales tax one, less so. My suspicion there, or we asked about actually two sales tax approaches. One was keeping the fifth penny as it is now. The other one was to expand the base and lower the rate, so drop that fifth penny but apply the sales tax to certain purchases that don't currently or are not currently charged the sales tax. My suspicion is the reason the sales tax proposals receive less support is you kind of have bipartisan opposition to them. You have a core of Republicans who are just anti-tax, and that's going to include a sales tax. And you've got a core of Democrats who see the sales tax as a regressive tax, punishing their more hitting their constituents.
We're visiting with Dr. Michael Henderson, director of the Public Policy Research Lab at LSU. 877-217-5757 is your number. Here's something Senator Kennedy will like, a finding from the survey of 852 Louisianians. Most residents in our state believe spending can be cut without reducing services. 83% of Republicans and 52% of Democrats.
That's right. That's right. There is a large share of the population who think that, you know, there is wiggle room, and that there is spending cuts that can be made that are not going to impact services. And you see this is kind of the debate out there, and I expect we'll hear more of it as the session goes on and moves into the special that will follow, is whether or not spending cuts are framed as hitting healthcare and higher education versus spending cuts are reducing inefficiencies or wasteful spending.
Half of the people in our state think the state is headed in the wrong direction, but that's an increase of 10% from last year. Is that significant?
Yes, it is. That is mostly because it looked like we were moving in the opposite direction for a moment there. We have spent much of the last several years where more people were saying the state was heading in the wrong direction than the right direction. Really, since about 2013, we've seen that every year in the survey except last year. So it looked like, you know, maybe people were becoming a little more optimistic, But now we've seen things revert back to where, you know, the share saying that it's heading in the wrong direction outnumbers the share saying in the it's heading in the right direction. And I would say, actually, it was an interesting shift this year. It was most of that shift is coming from Democrats who are saying the state's heading in the wrong direction. A bigger increase for them than there is for Republicans. In fact, more Democrats say that now than Republicans in the state.
70% of those surveyed indicated they believe most elected officials in Louisiana do not care what people like themselves think. And 73% say the state is more politically divided now than in the past.
Yes, I think these are some of the most compelling findings out of all of our releases so far this year. Is this to me, this should be disturbing to all of us. This suggests that there's increasing disillusionment with the democratic process in the state. I mean, we have a lot of people who are saying we're getting increasingly divided, even though more people today than in the past say they want to see elected leaders from different sides work together. They're saying they have no faith that they're going to see that happen. They think the parties are more divided. They don't think elected officials care what they think. This is a bipartisan attitude. Not only that, we ask them not only what they think about, you know, how much they trust state government, we ask them how confident they are in each other, in the residents of the state to make, you know, wise political decisions. And it's not very much. About two-thirds mm-hmm. of respondents just have very little faith in ourselves, you know, our neighbors and our peers to, you know, get things moving in the right way to make good political decisions.
78% of respondents say they trust state government only some of the time or never. And 79% of people believe both Republicans and Democrats will bicker and oppose each other even if it keeps them from solving the state's problems. That's certainly in play as we head for the fiscal cliff on July 1st. The Republicans and Democrats will have to come to some sort of consensus, or it'll be potential calamity at the Capitol.
That's right.
We'll talk more with Dr. Michael Henderson, and we'll go to the phone lines with you if you'd like to participate. There are a couple of lines open. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. We're back after this news break with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and you're welcome to provide your insights, input, questions, whatever's on your mind. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you're dialing locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And as always, we invite emails at talk@talklouisiana.org. Dr. Michael Henderson, director of the LSU Public Policy Research Lab, is in-house. And for those unfamiliar with Dr. Henderson, he took over the job he has now a few years ago, and he does the Louisiana survey every year. LSU conducts this, and this is 852 respondents who were polled between January 26th and March 3rd. And for those unfamiliar with you, you were certainly educated at some of the finest universities in North America.
That's right. LSU is one of them. The other was Harvard. I got my undergraduate degrees at LSU and my doctorate at Harvard.
877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, Dr. Henderson, does your polling indicate whether the people are aware that the anti-tax Republicans you refer to have to pander to their corporate donors who want to keep all those tax breaks to the detriment of decent health care and education for the majority of people?
All right. Dan has expressed this a few times, but it's a valid question, and it also applies to, I think, the Democratic Party as well. But there are those who believe that corporate entities control the Capitol here and the Capitol in Washington. What do you think?
So we don't ask any questions that would get at perceptions of where politicians are getting their campaign contributions from, and the extent to which those donors may have interests in policies that are done or that are handled at the state legislature. I mean, my guess is if we asked people about that, that a lot of people, just given the kind of cynicism we see in other questions we have about the government in general, my guess is a lot of people probably do believe that. Now, whether or not they associate those kinds of things with their specific legislators or with specific kinds of donors or contributions or with corporations in general and specific policies, I'm not sure. We don't often see that level of specificity and awareness in most public opinion polling. But the sense that people might be cynical about who wins and loses, I'm sure we would see that kind of attitude if we asked specifically about that.
Thank you, Dan. 877-217-5757 as we move along with Dr. Michael Henderson from the LSU Public Policy Research Lab. And this survey has been done, I think, every year since 2003, correct?
That is correct.
And so it's an annual event, and it sets a benchmark. You can go year to year and detect things. Like right now, 50% of the people in the state think the government is headed in the wrong direction. And this is a prelude not only to the so-called fiscal cliff, which potentially is coming in less than 3 months, but there is an election next year. In fact, the election for governor and all the statewide offices and the legislature, that election is 18 months, year and a half, and 1 week away. It'll be the 12th day of October of 2019, and right now I'm sure a lot of decisions are being made with that date in mind. So how does that affect government when people are running for election or re-election?
Oh, yeah, that has tremendous impact. We know that policymakers and leaders make a lot of their decisions in the year, a couple years leading up to an election, with that election in mind. We can see them avoid certain issues or engage certain issues directly related to how they think that will matter for an election. The kind of thing we're seeing in this year's polling, this amount of cynicism, this just despair almost about how the things are going in the state and about the political process in the state, I'm not sure who that helps and that hurts. I think we could speculate a lot of different directions on who it might be able to, how different individuals or groups might be able to try to benefit electorally from it. But I can just say myself, I don't see this as suggesting for sure that, for example, the governor's in hot water, partly because a lot of this, the people that are saying the state's in the wrong direction are Democrats. And my guess is when they're saying the wrong direction, they're not thinking about John Bel Edwards. They're probably thinking about the legislature. And likewise, Republicans are probably thinking the opposite.
All right. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. And we do have enough time. If you'd like to get in, you can do so. 877-217-5757. Tomorrow, you'll be unveiling a report on the latest area you've surveyed. And this is gender discrimination and sexual harassment, a big issue now. And some probably wonder how our state compares with the rest of America on this. Do we think this is a big issue right now?
You know, it's hard to say how important people think it is, partly because, you know, we didn't ask questions in a way that said sort of where does this issue rank among all other issues. But what we did is we asked people some questions that we asked last year about, whether and how much discrimination in our society they think women face. We asked them about, equality of opportunity for women in the workplace, asked about, are there obstacles that women face in particular more than men in, opportunity. And so what's neat about this year's survey and what we'll be releasing tomorrow is we asked those questions this year and a year ago, and in the middle of that, we saw the rise of the Me Too movement. And so we're going to see some interesting shifts in how people think about discrimination that women face in our society.
877-217-5757, Ray in Prairieville. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Henderson. Hi, Ray.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim, and thanks for Dr. Henderson for being on the program. I was curious. The poll indicates that the voters, the people who responded to your poll, go contrary to what our legislator is telling us. And I'm making an assumption, but I'd like your comment on it, that the legislators are actually following the people who financially support them, which is more the moneyed interest, and not the voters in general. I'd like to hear Dr. Henderson's comment on that, because the we're facing a fiscal cliff. We need to improve roads, schools, pay teachers more, and we can't do that with the kind of approach our legislator has taken.
Thanks for the question, Ray. So I think it's a great question. I think we need to be a little bit careful when we're interpreting polling, particularly about policy matters related to budgets and taxes and spending, because it's not only is that policy area tremendously complicated, public thinking about it is also complicated and nuanced. And so, you know, one way to read these results is that most Louisiana residents say there is a problem with the budget, there is a fiscal cliff, it needs to be dealt with, and the most popular item is to make some changes to the income tax, to eliminate some deductions and exemptions and lower the rates and increase some state revenues that way. There are also people also say they're willing to pay higher taxes to fund higher education, K-12 education, and transportation infrastructure. So you can look at all that and say, hey, look, the people are speaking clearly. This is what we need to do. And I suspect we'll see some Democrats in the legislature and the administration say those things. But folks on the other side, they can look at these data and say, but look, people also say that they think taxes are high. So at the same time, you kind of get these mixed signals where people say taxes are high, but they're also saying, but I'll pay taxes. I'll pay more taxes to fund higher education. And they also so the most popular tool to address the fiscal cliff is making changes to the income tax. But another one that got a majority is to just do spending cuts only. And so, you know, House Republicans are going to point to that and say, hey, look, 52% of people say they're fine dealing with this just through cuts. And look, a lot of them think we can cut state government spending without hurting services. So both sides have something they can look at here. And I suspect we'll see both sides try to frame the conversation in terms of those kinds of public attitudes.
Ray Shell writes, do the results of the poll indicate that our legislators go with their financial supporters instead of the voters? That's kind of an expansion on Dan's question earlier. Do you get that from the findings that you have?
I mean, it is possible to interpret the results that way, but we can't look at these results and know that that's what's happening. You know, as I said a moment ago, it could just be that people are thinking about these in complicated ways, or maybe not clear ways, and maybe there's some inconsistencies in what the public thinks, and that means that different leaders can point to different kinds of results and say, look, no, I'm trying to follow my constituents. My constituents say taxes are high. My constituents say they're willing to deal with the fiscal cliff through spending cuts only. My constituents think that there's a lot of waste in government. So people can point and say that too. And as long as there are those sort of almost mixed signals in public opinion, it's easy for leaders to then try to frame results focusing just on the side that fits their favorite policies. That's why I think it's important to look at a broad set of questions like we do here and really try to pull these responses all together.
David in Lafayette writes, Dr. Henderson's an interesting fellow. He sounds like he's a bit from the Virginia Tidewater. Where is he from?
I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've spent the majority of my life here. After finishing college, I taught here for a little bit and then moved away for about 10 years and returned 4 years ago.
David also asks, he says, 852 people is kind of an odd number. How do you arrive at this figure as far as your respondents?
That's a great question. So the what you do is, when you're doing probability sampling, you don't go into it saying, I want exactly 852 people. You sort of say, this is the target I want to reach. And so our target was 800. And then you draw your sample, your phone numbers you're going to call, and you call out that entire sample. And it turns out that we had enough sample that we ended up with 852. In fact, I would suggest you should always be a little suspicious of polls that have sample sizes that are exactly like on 800 or 500 or 1,000. Usually that means they hit a target and they stopped calling their sample, and that means they're eliminating some people from their sample non-probabilistically, non-randomly, and you don't want to do that.
All right. And who does the survey? You do it, but are we talking students? Who are the people who actually make the calls?
So the Public Policy Research Lab employs about 100, 110 callers. It's a mix. Some of them are students, but most of them are part-time employees.
Well, thank you, Dr. Henderson, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Dr. Michael Henderson to talk about the survey's findings on media trust. That should be interesting.
That should be a fun one. Thank you, Jim.
Until then, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, and we'll be back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, produced by Allie Baltazar today. And still time to get in our final segment with Dr. Gary Mackliff. Your numbers 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. As part of a national book tour, Barnes & Noble at LSU will be hosting a book reading and signing by Dr. Mackliff for his work, The Future of Conservation in America, A Chart for Rough Water, written with John Jarvis, the director of the National Park Service. It's a book about conservation that's been described by Pulitzer Prize-winning scientist E.O. Wilson as a call to action written with authority and passion. President Jimmy Carter says it's a course for a new generation of conservation action and leadership. And Dr. Mackliff will be here not only for the book tour, which is Friday the 13th, as in a week from tomorrow, 3:30 to 5:30 at LSU's bookstore, but he's also involved with the LSU Center for Collaborative Knowledge. There is a conference, Sustainable Cities and Communities, the inaugural conference, which is taking place next Thursday and Friday. And Dr. Mackliff is one of the principal speakers at this event, and it is very good to talk with Dr. Gary Mackliff. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about the book, first of all. You have been at the top of this for many years. He was a professor of forest resources at the University of Idaho, served in the Obama administration as science advisor to the director of the National Park Service, and is teaching at Clemson University. What is the basic sentiment about conservation in America? Is this something that we're casually disregarding?
No, I think Americans care deeply about conservation, but what John and I were concerned about is that with the current assault on conservation by the Trump administration, that the conservation community wavered between a kind of optimism it was all going to go away and be fine, or the sky is falling. And we wanted to share, particularly with a younger generation, real strategies that could work to advance conservation and a sense of confidence and optimism about conservation in America for the long-term future. We also strongly felt from our experience that the time has come for a younger generation to take on the leadership of the conservation movement in the United States.
You say the conservation of our country is under assault by the Trump administration. How so?
In many different respects. So we are the only country to pull out of the Paris Accord dealing with climate change, and the denial of climate change is something that will affect the entire country and certainly Louisiana. And in addition, at the local level, we see rollback of regulations that protect air and water, rollback of regulations that keep our automobile fleet continually becoming more efficient. And we also see an attack on science, whether it's through censorship, whether it's not appointing scientists to what were scientific positions. So it's a broad assault. But that cannot be the whole, and in our book, we make clear outrage is easy, strategy is hard, so we quickly pivot from describing that assault to what can be done. What are the positive things that conservation can do?
877-217-5757 for Dr. Gary Mackliff. His book is Conservation in America. As noted, he was in the Obama administration as a science advisor to the director of the National Park Service and is now the university professor of environmental sustainability at Clemson. 877-217-5757. Now I've heard it more than once over the last few months. We've had this unseasonably cold and snowy period in New England over the last few months. It snowed in New York a few days ago in April. People are saying this is evidence that there's no climate change, there's no global warming. How do you answer them?
Weather is not climate. And in fact, it's pretty good evidence that the climate is changing because it's unseasonably cold. And sometimes our storms have become more volatile and more severe. Climate change is not about all parts of the Earth equally becoming warmer and warmer and warmer. The biggest threat is that our climate is changing in ways we don't fully understand. The result is flooding. The result is, look at Hurricane Maria, et cetera. These kinds of volatilities, that's the essence of climate change. And I think that we do talk about in the book the importance of it, but also that scientists may not be the best spokespersons for understanding climate change. The U.S. military understands it's real and is adjusting it. They call it a threat multiplier. Insurance companies understand it's real and are adjusting their premiums. Farmers understand it's real and are adjusting their crops and planting schedules. So I think there's a broader American voice on the importance of dealing with climate change than just listening to us scientists.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Gary Maclis. His book is The Future of Conservation in America, and he will be at LSU not only for this conference next Thursday and Friday, but Friday the 13th he will be at the Barnes & Noble at LSU, 3:30 to 5:30, to talk about his book. I'm sure you'll sign it if you pick up a copy. Doug on Jefferson. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. I'm glad to hear the discussion. You know, this current administration's been described as a massive assault on the public interest, and your guest is describing that. I think a lot of folks, we've lived with the benefit of regulations that some people complain about, and, you know, clean air and clean water and our system of public lands. All those things are being taken out by these folks who are in power now, and a lot of the public may not realize that. They may not hear about it, but it is an attack on these things. It's a hostility to things that have benefited us, and people may take them for granted and not really think they can be taken away.
All right. Your thoughts, Dr. Maclis? Thank you, Doug.
I agree with Doug. I do think then it behooves all citizens to better understand what are the regulations that protect us, what are the things that can be done to ensure that those regulations are kept in place. One of the things we call for in the book is that increasingly conservationists need to run for office and vote as conservationists, because we need to have politicians in place who understand the benefits of appropriate regulation. It's clear that there are some regulations too complicated, too difficult, that don't result in safe water, safe air, etc. But we need to keep these regulations in place, and the way you do that is elect officials who care about the environment.
You have traveled extensively internationally. You've worked in China and in Haiti. How do other countries regard this issue?
I think other countries are realizing that climate change is the existential threat of this era. When I talk to young people wherever I go about this issue, I make clear to them that their entire careers, the young people now, their entire careers will be spent dealing with the issues and fallout of climate change. In other countries, it's even more threatening. There are countries in the Pacific Islands that can possibly disappear. There are countries in Asia where chronic flooding will lead to millions and millions of refugees that will have to be dealt with. So other countries around the world see it as a threat and realize that there are things that must be done to deal with that threat. And I believe, frankly, I believe the United States will come around, that we will come around and see the importance, the value, and in the end, the economic benefit of treating climate change seriously.
I'm not trying to be flippant, but during the campaign for president, President Trump said climate change was a hoax that was started by the Chinese.
that's fake news.
But a lot of people bought into that, I'm sure.
Yes, and that's why I said before that I'm not sure scientists are the best spokespersons right now for dealing with climate change, because I think the American public, when it's one scientist saying it's real and then they find another scientist that says maybe not, the public can be easily confused. But if the public listens to our businessmen, our farmers, our soldiers, our military leaders, and insurance companies and bankers and companies that are relocating, if we start to listen to those other voices, I think the American people will kind of scratch their head, think about it, and do the right thing.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Gary Maklis. And as noted, he will be here next week in Baton Rouge. And if you'd like to meet him in person, you can do so next Friday, 3:30 at the LSU Barnes & Noble. And the book is The Future of Conservation in America, A Chart for Rough Water. Thank you, Dr. Maklis. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Hope you have a splendid day. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.